Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to TAG Eastern Europe, a podcast on Central and Eastern Europe and a sister project to New Eastern Europe, the exclusive bi-monthly magazine dedicated to this region. My name is Maciek Makulski, and with me is the second co-host, Adam Reichardt. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Maciek. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 56 of TAG Eastern Europe. This podcast is developed in thanks to the generous support from our patrons, which we are truly grateful. If you would like to support the podcast and if you enjoy what we do, please consider becoming a patron. You can visit us at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope.
And this podcast is also a member of Europod. This network of podcasts brings discussion on political and societal trends in Europe and beyond.
So Maciek, this episode is dedicated to looking at a very interesting set of relations which have developed quite dynamically, I can say, over the last several years. So maybe I'll ask you to introduce who is the person that we interview in this episode, and what is the topic that we are covering.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. I did an interview with Dimitar Bechev, who is a research fellow at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and Atlantic Council. He is also a visiting fellow at the Institute of Human Sciences in Vienna, and he is really good expert on many topics. Yeah. He specializes, for instance, in Turkish politics, but I didn't want to talk with him about like internal Turkish affairs, but I was really interested on the topic of Russian-Turkish relations, because it seemed to me an important topic which is not that heavily discussed recently. And I was even interested how to define the relations between the two countries, because maybe our listeners remember for sure, Adam, 2015, when there was an issue with Russian jet in Turkish airspace, and this incident like froze the relations between the two countries. Yeah. But there are some improvements, especially in trade relations and maybe in general bilateral political relations. And what is interesting that these two countries have to talk between each other on many different arenas, on many different fields. And that was what I wanted to discuss with Dimitar. Mm-hmm. And I was even thinking after this interview how to call maybe this relationship between two countries. And I'm interested, what do you think by calling them as frenemies, like Russia and Turkey? Because I think maybe this term fits here. Maybe our listeners will judge it after listening the interview.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the term frenemies is probably a good term or phrase for this relationship. I think, as you mentioned, 2015 saw this incident which definitely caused a lot of tension between the two countries. But in the end, yeah, that's right. It was the shooting down of a Russian jet by Turkish forces. Definitely caused a lot of tension. And we saw some of the how it played out at that time. But I think what it eventually showed and illustrated is that both these countries, at least for the moment, their interests somehow are intersected or are able to, or need to be, they need each other more than they need to be against each other, I think. And there's a lot of different also factors that you talk about in the interview with Dimitar, and we'll go get into that in a moment. Different factors that are at play, including, of course, the role of each country in the Black Sea region. The fact that Turkey is a member of NATO is also, I think, an important factor in this relationship, and it has caused a lot of tension also between Turkey and other NATO members. So we should also keep that in mind. And of course, you know, the neighborhood, what's happening in Syria particularly is very interesting developments in terms of these two countries' relations. And Maciek, I just want to mention before we move on is that the interview was actually recorded before the outbreak of the conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh, the flare-up of the conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh. And so that's another dimension, but you don't touch on it right here so much. But I think what the discussion here with Dimitar is, and I think it's also worth mentioning, he's the author of a book which is called Rival Power Russia in Southeast Europe, which came out a couple of years ago, but still very much relevant, shows that these two countries and their relations are very important, especially when we're looking at the regional context, and also that both of them have these kind of ambitions for a much wider regional and maybe even global role that they want to play. So for the moment, frenemy, I think, is right because they are friends. But if we think longer term, will they stay friends? That's the question that I think the question mark that remains.
Thank you, Adam, for mentioning that, because Southern Caucasus is definitely one of these arenas where the relations between Russia and Turkey simply take place,
right?
Or happen, and as you said, we didn't talk about that. We have chosen that we focus on different aspects, but the good news is that Dimitar agreed to visit us at Turkistan Europe in future again, because as he suggested, also we didn't talk too much about the Black Sea region on the Balkans, which he and in this topic he also has broad knowledge. So I think Dimitar will be our guest in future.
Yeah, there's so much that we can cover, and I hope I'm sure we'll take him up on that offer, and he'll take us up on the offer. It would be very useful for us and our listeners. Okay, Maciek, so I think with that, maybe we can move to the interview.
Hello, Dimitar. It's great to have you at Turkistan Europe.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dimitar is a research fellow at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He's also a research fellow at the Atlantic Council, and currently he's also a visiting fellow at the Institute for Human Sciences in Vienna. I hope I didn't make any mistake. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dimitar.
It's perfect.
Okay, so we are going to talk about Russian-Turkish relations, since you recently wrote an interesting article about Turkish discovery of gas field in the Black Sea, which is probably an important factor in the relations between Russia and Turkey. But let's start maybe from a little bit more general question, maybe even a bit theoretical question. I would like to ask you, how would you describe the relations between Russia and Turkey in general terms? I mean, is it an asymmetric relation between the patron and client, or other way around, more symmetric relations where both sides have potential to set the tone of mutual contacts?
That's a great question. And the easiest way to respond to this is just to go back to the early Facebook days when you had this complicated status. So yeah. Russia and Turkey, it is complicated. because their relationship combines competition and also interdependence and cooperation. Well, some issues, they obviously do business together, from Syria to energy and even in Libya. On other issues, they are rivals and competitors. But what we know, and what we've seen over a longer period of time, even before Putin and Erdogan came to power, is that they somehow managed to coexist and to keep their points of difference under control, not letting them escalate and turn into or cause a much more severe forms of conflict. And there was a clear moment when that came to a test for all our listeners. Many of them probably remember in late 2015 when Turkey shot down a Russian fighter jet at the border of Syria and the brief crisis. But somehow they, and we can go later in the conversation into how it happened, but they managed to turn it around and restore links and reset their cooperative relationship.
Mm-hmm. So you pointed out energy. Also, you pointed out Syria, which I have also on my list. What are the important areas of cooperation and competition, a bit as you said, between Turkey and Russia? Would you something add to the list in general terms, without going to the details? What are other areas of such, you know, dense contacts between the two countries?
Well, closer to Eastern Europe, Turkey is a Black Sea nation, and also it is in many ways part of the Caucasus as well. It has this regional connection. So in the Black Sea and the Caucasus, Turkey doesn't necessarily have the same interests as Russia, but it recognizes that Russia's power has been on the rise since the war in Georgia in 2008 and clearly after the annexation of Crimea. So Turkey has to deal with a resurgent Russia, which is much more likely to use hard power.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
In its foreign policy, I mean, Ukraine would be a good example, but also the Georgian war. And it has to balance against Russia, be it through NATO or through links to other countries in this neighborhood, starting with Georgia and Azerbaijan all the way to Ukraine. So that's another dimension that is often overlooked because so much is happening in Syria and in the Eastern Mediterranean. But the Black Sea, Eastern European dimension, and the Caucasus dimension is just as important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think now we have more or less a general map of different interests or contacts between the two countries. Let's hope it will help us to develop some of these points at least. And let's start maybe from energy, since, as I mentioned in your article written for Foreign Policy in late August, you have described Turkey's discovery of a natural gas field in the Black Sea. And maybe let's unpack this issue in two steps. First, maybe what is the significance of this discovery for Turkish gas sector, and maybe in Turkish policy in general. And then in further step, what does that discovery change, if anything, in Turkish-Russian gas relations?
Well, we are yet to see how significant the discovery is, because it's a complex issue. It involves also expertise from the field of geology. How significant the find is. I mean, the early estimates are for about 320 billion cubic meters, which is solid, but not as impressive compared to other offshore fields in the vicinity of Turkey, say the Zohr field in Egypt. And the second question is if this gas is recoverable. In other words, how complicated it is to recoup it and to put it on the market, and whether the costs or whatever company is involved in partnership with the Turkish National Gas Company, Potash, will break even and make profits. So the economics of the find are also to be worked out. So that is the politics, but also the economy, the economic dimension. So we don't know right now, but I guess we'll find out in the next couple of months and also up to a year to be able to have a better estimate and have not just political commentators like myself, but also technical experts chipping in with their assessment. But the line and my argument in the piece you referred to is that ultimately it adds further ammunition to Turkey in the forthcoming negotiations with Gazprom over the various long-term contracts covering gas supplies from Russia to Turkey. First, those concerning Turk Stream. This is, again, the new pipeline that Putin and Erdogan unveiled in December 2014, which became a reality in January this year. But also by 2025, the gas which comes through another underwater pipeline crossing the Black Sea, the Blue Stream, which is another interesting case. I mean, Blue Stream, just by way of background, that's a project that was initiated in 1997 and came online in 2005. And it gave a major boost to the economic relationship between Turkey and Russia. As a result of Blue Stream, Turkey became the second most significant customer for Gazprom after Germany. So that's an important geopolitical, but also economic shift that has shaped the relationship.
Let me jump in and just to confirm. And now Turkey is the second largest client in terms of gas after Germany, still, right?
That's correct. And that's been the case for more than a decade now. I mean, Turkey started from pretty much nothing. The first gas supplies, again, it's an interesting story. Gas started flowing in 1988. So it's a relatively recent relationship. By comparison, Russian gas started being sold on the Western European markets in the late 60s and early 70s. So Turkey is a relative latecomer. But because of rapid economic growth, demand has been going up until recently, of course. Now it's a more different story over the past 2 years. But Turkey became a significant market for the Russians, the Russian gas. And just to jump to another issue, Turkey might also become a market for the Russian nuclear industry. One of the landmarks of Turkish-Russian cooperation is the project to build Turkey's first nuclear power plant at Aku, near Mersin. This is on the Mediterranean coast of Turkey. So Russia sees Turkey as an important energy market, not just a geopolitical and military player.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what I understand in that relations, in that relation, Turkey is also an important trade partner, right? So for Russia, so anytime there are some problems, Russia will keep in mind that there are important agreements, contracts, or deals on the table, which taking also into account Russia's economic situation, play a role, right?
Absolutely, yes. But it goes both ways, because also Turkish companies have been very successful on the Russian market, for example, the construction sector, and not just in Russia, but also in the wider post-Soviet space. Just to give an example, you surely remember the European Cup, which was co-hosted by Poland in Ukraine.
Yes,
I mean, that was a highlight for both countries. So the stadium in Donetsk that hosted some of the games in eastern Ukraine, now, of course, in the breakaway so-called People's Republic of Donetsk, that was built by Turkish contractors. Even Gazprom's headquarters in Moscow was a project implemented by Turkish contractors. Mm-hmm. So the Turkish construction business from the 1990s has made a lot of money on the Russian and the post-Soviet market. And of course, when there was a conflict in 2016, that was a vulnerability that the Russians exploited, just shutting down access and making life difficult for those Turkish contractors to put pressure on Ankara.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned this issue with Russian jet. It was in the end of 2015, if I remember correctly.
Sure.
And it was a turning point, if we can say like that, in Russia-Turkish relations, because of course the whole situation caused problems, frustrations on both sides, and we didn't know how it will develop. So now it seems for me that the situation is better, as I also understand what you have described. So they managed to improve the bilateral relations. But I have a question about this trade exchange between the two countries. Is it comparable to the pre-2015 level, or it is even more than it was before this issue from 2015?
No, trade is going down because both Russia, but also Turkey has and Turkey have been in dire straits economically, and especially Turkey since 2018. The economic difficulties in the country are now, of course, made worse by COVID-19, but they have longer history. And because of slow growth and now, of course, recession, the demand for Russian energy has slowed down in Turkey. And also Turkey has done a fair share of diversification, liquefied natural gas, which is a topical issue in Eastern Europe. Has made inroads on the Turkish market, so more and more of the local demand is covered by other suppliers, say Algeria, Nigeria, even the United States of America, which has become an energy exporter, as well as Qatar, key ally of Turkey. So economic turnover is stagnant and even going down. There is no direct connection between the geopolitical business those two do and the trading relationship, which I must say is pretty robust because, again, even in the worst of times during 2016, the crisis, they didn't lead to a shutdown of gas supplies. It follows a very different logic. But going back to Syria, I think this is at the core of the relationship.
Yeah, sure.
It's essentially, in 2016, Turkey saw that the only way to be influential in Syria is to work with the Russians as opposed to push back against them, because the intervention that Putin launched made Russia the ultimate power broker in Syria, which is important because that's a country that shares 900 kilometers of border with Turkey. And because of the conflict, there's been massive political spillover into Turkey, be it because of refugees, because of jihadi networks, and also because of the Kurdish issue. I don't think we have that much time to go deeper into that. But essentially, Turkey decided and saw it clearly that it has to embrace the Russians and work with Russia and accommodate Moscow in order to get what it wants in Syria. And before it was different, before 2015, 2016, they worked across purposes.
Which is also interesting because on the most general level, in Syria, Russia supports Assad's regime while Turkey supports anti-Assad opposition, if I may say that.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So this make this situation even more complicated. So maybe let's try to also make an update about this situation, because I think because of COVID, even the war in Syria was somehow forgotten. This conflict was somehow forgotten, and maybe not forgotten, but there are other things on the international agenda discussed more often. I would like to know what important developments could we have missed in recent months in regards to the situation in Syria and then regarding Turkish-Russian relations there? Because if I remember correctly, at the beginning of this year, 2020, before pandemic came to Europe, the situation in Syria and the borderland with Turkey was rather hot, and I think there was a huge risk of escalation of war between Turkey and Syria, and then Russia and Turkey managed somehow to settle this situation on during the political negotiations. So what do we have now right there?
Well, you're absolutely right. In February, there was Syrian government offensive against Idlib, which is the largest remaining opposition-held enclave right on the border with Turkey. Mm-hmm. And Turkey has troops there because of a series of deals done with the Russians in 2017 and 2018. At some point, there was this incident during the offensive where more than 30 Turkish servicemen were killed in an airstrike. Now, both Turks and the Russians kept the pretense that it was the Syrian regime rather than the Russian Air Force responsible for the airstrike. But there's reason to believe it was Russia delivering the airstrike. But what really matters is how it played out, that ultimately Russia stood on the sidelines and Turkey had to confront only Assad, which is a different ballgame. That the capabilities the Turkish military has are in a totally different league compared to the beleaguered Syrian regime. And ultimately, by pushing back there and making some gains in Idlib and stopping the regime offensive, Erdogan managed to get Putin's attention, and Putin stepped in as an arbitrator. And there's a ceasefire, and there was another Russian-Turkish deal. And that's how it works in Syria. Of course, Russia and Turkey have opposing views. But then again, Turkey sees Putin as an arbiter or even a constraining force on the regime, somebody you could work with to contain the Iranians and Assad, and also to deliver what Turkey really wants. In other words, of course, regime change now is a is a non-starter, something that Turkey pursued early in the conflict. But because of Russia's starting in 2016, Turkey has been able to launch several offensives and to establish buffer zones along the border to keep at bay the Kurdish separatists. And Russia has managed to balance between the Kurds and Turkey, but also between the regime and Turkey. But ultimately gave its blessings and opened their space on several occasions and allowed Turkey to make important gains, which served Turkish national interests. And many people in Ankara, both those who are ideologically aligned with Erdogan, Islamic conservatives, but also nationalists with secular views, appreciate the fact that Russia has been sensitive to Turkish, or how Turkey sees its national interests, constraining the Kurds. And also they give Russia credit for helping Erdogan defeat the coup attempt in July 2016. The conspiracy theory in Turkey that is pretty dominant in the minds of many is that ultimately it was the US pulling the strings, fomenting this government overthrow, whereas Putin was on Erdogan's side and he supported Turkey against the Fethullah Gulen's network, blamed for the coup attempt. And that's why, even if you have second thoughts about Russian power and you see Russia as a threat in the long term, you give them credit for helping the government muddle through and delivering what Turkey needs in Syria. Again, it goes back to what we said at the outset of the conversation. It is complicated.
Yeah, exactly. I hope we at least partially managed to explain that in as easy way as possible. Maybe one more question about that, just to maybe confirm or exclude some thesis about that, because this you said about this Putin's position as an arbiter in the situation in the conflict. Does it mean that Turkey has to like wait for a move from Russia's side, or because Russia controls the situation to the greater extent in comparison to Turkey, or other way around? I'm thinking about what is the Turkey's room of maneuver here in the conflict.
Well, it has some room of maneuver because it has troops on the ground, but again, it wants to avoid confrontation with Russia, because one lesson learned from 2016 is you cannot win against the Russians. In 2016, what they did to fight back against Turkey after the shutdown of the plane, they used economic sanctions and they used all manner of pressure, which was under the threshold of NATO's Article 5. So Turkey was put on the spot. NATO was not throwing its weight behind Turkey, and Turkey was left one-on-one with the Russians, which is ultimately the strategic fear many Turks have, or policymakers have. It's the same with Georgia in 2008, right? There was a difficult conflict for Turkey because it had good relations both with Tbilisi and with Moscow. It feared that if it ratcheted up the rhetoric and if NATO and the Bush administration got involved, ultimately, they wouldn't stay committed, and Russia would respond to escalate, and then Turkey will be left alone dealing with the consequences. So that's why they were very accommodating. So in this big picture, Turkey is always balancing between West and Russia. Its relationship with both the EU and NATO and the US, of course, are in deep crisis right now. But it doesn't mean that Turkey wants to leave NATO, because the benefits of being part of the alliance are clear. At the same time, it prefers to see itself as an independent power that can juggle between Moscow and the West. It refused to implement sanctions after the annexation of Crimea. And use Russia as leverage, but also use NATO as leverage against Russia. For instance, Turkey has subscribed to all the different policies of containing Russia in the Black Sea. But many people here in Washington see the drift away. If you see sitting in Russia, I don't think anybody there believes that Turkey has become a real ally of the Russians.
Interesting. Since we are running out of time, maybe I will ask you the last question, which relates to the main topic of 2020, which is COVID-19 pandemic. And what is, if any, impact of this pandemic on the relations between Turkey and Russia? What I was thinking about, whether maybe Russia's vaccine diplomacy is somehow a factor here, whether Turkey considers buying a future vaccine from Russia or not. Maybe you can say something about that.
I don't know. I haven't seen any statements coming from Ankara, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some positive moves in case the Russians decide to use it as a soft power leverage. I mean, anti-Westernism runs high in Turkey, and you could exploit this overtures from Russia. But having said that, I see the impact as mostly negative in the sense that COVID and the shutdowns that it led to are now causing recession in Turkey, which means that there will be less economic exchange, less growth on both sides. And it's depressing the commercial relationship. Secondly, Turkey has used the situation to do a bit of what China does, to start spreading or distributing to other countries personal protective equipment and medical supplies, trying to portray itself as a provider of public goods, as has Russia, really. But they have managed to keep apart in the sense that countries that receive Russian aid are not necessarily the countries that receive Turkish aid. Turkey is mostly looking at the Middle East and especially Africa, and some of it went to the Balkans as well. But they can become easily competitors in some places. Who gives more by way of support? But again, I don't see any immediate effect on the bilateral relationship. These are just sideshows. But again, I mean, going back to your question, yeah, the vaccine might give Russia some PR points. Another footnote that we didn't talk about is that, interestingly enough, Turkey was the country that recognized Lukashenko's election, for what it's worth. So Erdogan was accommodating Kremlin on this count. It's not that many people care in Turkey, but the government was quick to jump on Lukashenko and say, yeah, he's the winner.
Interesting. Dimitar, thank you very much for your insights. There are many, many points we could develop, but I hope we'll have another occasion if you agree to join us in future.
Absolutely.
For Talk Eastern Europe. So let's treat it as a first episode with your... It is the first episode with your contribution, but this is the first in a longer series. So thank you again very much for your insight and for joining us.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
That was Maciek's interview with Dimitar Bechev, who is a research fellow at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He is also with the Atlantic Council, as well as a fellow with the Institute of Human Sciences in Vienna. Maciek, I thought it was a very interesting discussion. I think, as we had talked about in the beginning of the episode, It was recorded before the outbreak of the escalation of the war in Nagorno-Karabakh. But certainly, what we've learned during this discussion is the intricacies of the relationship between Turkey and Russia, and the question about whether or not this relationship is going to hold as it is. So for the moment, it sounds like the interests are more on both sides for keeping some sort of positive relationship together. But certainly, as history has shown, and as the region is quite volatile in many different parts, I think we will see possibly some tensions still grow. And this is from my takeaway, at least from the interview. Some tensions still may grow between the two countries, especially as the economic situation, as was discussed, in both countries starts to worsen, and then we might start seeing these interests diverge rather than converge.
Yeah, and as Dimitar said, in general terms, the trade exchange between the two countries has not improved or is not that good as it was in the past.
Right, exactly. So there might not be so much motivation to hang on to this relationship, as we call it, the frenemy relationship.
Yeah, that's the thing. What kind of, you know, what will be more important in, like, say, maybe not long perspective, but even in short, maybe longer perspective. I'm thinking more
medium
interest,
and long-term, yeah,
or rivalry, yeah, like or more.
Right.
That will be interesting to watch. I am generally curious what our listeners think about this interview and this discussion. For us, for me especially, it was like a first attempt to like bring Turkish politics to the podcast. Of course, we have talked at Togistan Europe in the past about Black Sea region, and I think Turkey was discussed there as well. But here is, I think, a quite a new chapter for us, and I think, and at least we'll try to continue it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should, because I think that Turkey is playing a more important role in part of the region that we're covering. We can look at Caucasus. We can look at Western Balkans. We can look at also relations even with some Central European countries. And at a certain point, this kind of rivalry for spheres of influence may clash again between Russia and Turkey. And of course, there's also the question of what is the role of the European Union in all this. Clearly, there's going to be a clash of aims for influence in many parts of our region, for better or for worse. I mean, we could look even at Moldova. We've seen Turkey playing even a wider role in Moldova, which I think for some people that might be kind of surprising. But as most of our listeners know, Moldova is one of the most covered countries on Talk Eastern Europe. No other podcast covers Moldova as much as we do, and we plan to continue as they are actually having elections coming up quite soon. So we definitely will cover them again. But just to illustrate that Turkey is a player in this region as well, and we should definitely be keeping our eye on that.
True. And looking at even broader perspective, there is a question about the relations between China and Turkey and how it will develop. So
absolutely,
we have plenty to talk here about this.
Absolutely.
About this country. Okay, I think we can stop this discussion right here, because in this episode, as in every our episode, we want also to deliver some special information. So I will start maybe.
Sure.
So if you have any comments about this episode or previous episodes or future episodes, as Adam recently asked you, so join our Facebook group or join discussion, put some comments, put some feedback there. We really appreciate that, because as we repeat and repeat in every episode, this podcast develops thanks to the support of all the listeners. And here I'm not even mentioning financial support, which is very important for us, and we are very grateful to all our patrons, but also this non-material, non-financial support.
Moral support, we can say.
Yeah, yeah, different kinds of support, or simply good words or suggestions what we can improve. It's really important. So thank you very much for this.
Yeah, yeah. I want to thank our members of the Facebook group because I think it was just kind of an opportunity. There's always an opportunity to get your feedback at the Facebook group on some topics. I just thought maybe it would be a good time to do so, and we got some great ideas, which I know we are already pursuing. So I also want to just kind of echo what Maciek has said, and thank you for participating in that. And feel free, if you have some ideas, feel free to drop us a line on the Facebook group. You can also send us a message on Twitter or by email if you're not on Facebook. And lastly, I do want to thank those, of course, most important supporters, the ones who do provide us financial support. We've been holding strong at 25 patrons at our Patreon page, and I want to encourage all of you out there who are listening to this podcast, if you enjoy what we do, if you enjoy listening to the podcast and you want to support us, please do become a member of our Patreon page. We have a link always at the beginning of the notes for this episode, so you can just click on that. And even $2 a month is kind of the first threshold where you can give us some money. That definitely is something that supports us, and we really are grateful. And one of the main we have lots of different benefits. One of the main benefits, of course, is the shout out on the podcast, and that's my honor always. I have an opportunity to thank all of our patrons. So I just want to thank all of the 25 patrons that we have at the moment: Amy, Naomi, Sylvia, John, Joel, Elise, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Dennis, Wilhelm, David, Elizabeth, Erica, Janos, Jason, Steve, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. We really do appreciate your support. And I just want to have one last announcement about this, patrons, is that from time to time, we do have meetings with our patrons where you have an opportunity to meet with us over the internet and have a chance to discuss with us your ideas in person, as best as possible in person in these times. And we are planning the next meeting on October 26th. With our patrons. They already have been notified about it. But I do want to just say, if you want to meet us, talk with us on Zoom, see who we are, have a chance to hear some of our ideas, and have a chance to give your ideas, and just to hang out and just talk about what's going on in the region. You know, feel free. You can still join if you become a patron up to October 26th. Before we get online, you'd have a chance to join us. So please head over to patreon.com/talkeastern-europe.
Adam, don't forget about the most important information about that. Usually it is at the evening. Of course, it depends on the time zone where someone is, but it's also occasion to have a glass of wine together or tea or coffee or something. So
yeah,
this is not formal meeting. Yeah,
absolutely. It's totally informal. We just want, you know, to see your faces. You can see our faces. We can just chat. These are also important things to do in these uncertain times that we have. You can, of course, also ask anything about developments with New Eastern Europe, the magazine. I'm happy to also give you some feedback on what's happening there. And some of you maybe who have listened to the special episodes we did at the end of last year might know that Maciek has a specialization that's a little bit beyond the region that we talk about. But maybe Maciek will do a special meeting with our patrons to talk about some of his hobby, which is, I think, for many of us who is listening, it's very interesting. But I'm not going to give anything else away, except if you're a patron, you get to join us and learn more.
Okay, so we are waiting for you, and I think that's all what we have for this episode, but correct me, Adam, if I'm wrong.
Last thing I just want to mention is that if you head over to New Eastern Europe's website, we are already beginning some coverage on the Georgian elections. Two episodes ago or so, we had an interview with Mackenzie Baldinger, who is our contributing editor based in Tbilisi. She is following the elections there, which take place on October 31st. If you want to follow that, head over to neweasterneurope.eu.
And of course, we will comment the result of the elections at Togeastern Europe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So stay tuned. Mackenzie would be happy to join us as well.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. Anything else, Adam?
That's all I got for today. Just last thing I would say is thank you everyone out there who's listening. We are really pleased to have you here with us.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye. Talk Eastern Europe is produced by Maciej Mikulski and Adam Reichert. The podcast is affiliated with New Eastern Europe, published by the Jan Nowak-Jeziorański College of Eastern Europe in Wrocław. Additional funding for this episode came from the Polish Ministry of Foreign Affairs in the framework of the Public Diplomacy 2020 New Dimension Grant Program.